Sport Pods.
The audacity to sign such a big player from your main rivals.
Our game finishes and we've won the league.
Me and Michael went out for a good 4 or 5 nights.
Welcome to the Premier League Storybook with me, Jake Humphrey. It's now time to look back on a story that will be told as long as football is around. The greatest moment ever? It's unavoidable giving the Premier League story up until this point such a Manchester United slant. As we've heard, Sir Alex Ferguson's teams dominated the division's early years, from Eric Cantona's signing, claiming the first title in 1993, to a group of young stars winning that incredible treble a few years later, and the club being the undoubted kings of the Premier League well into the new century. Meanwhile, their beleaguered neighbours, Manchester City, were the perennial underdogs throughout that time, bouncing around between divisions and most fans' joy coming from that perverse gallows humour as they watched yet another defeat. That all changed, however, when they were bought by the Abu Dhabi group. Like Chelsea before them, they swooped up an incredible array of players and finally toppled their rivals to the Premier League title in 2012 in the most incredible circumstances. I don't need to remind you, do I, of what happened. Sergio Aguero's goal in the dying seconds to rip the title away from Manchester United. So let's allow Julian Lescott, in City starting lineup that day against QPR, to tell the story for us. But before that, the league was starting to take notice of all the new players flocking to the blue half of Manchester. Here's Joe Cole at Chelsea at the time, when he started to take notice of City.
Obviously, the Aguero moment where they won, that's the significant one everyone will talk to. But I think signing Tevez, you know, the audacity to sign such a big player from your main rivals made me think, wow, these guys are not going to stop at anything to get where they need to go. So I think signing Tevez was a huge moment for Man City. You can just know the money they'd have had to throw at Carlos Tevez to get him there, because, you know, there's a premium to pay for a great player, but there's also a premium to pay for a great player from your rivals, like, and who's prepared to ruin his legacy at that club for. So I mean, listen, that was significant.
That City side was chock full of incredible talent, some of the best we've seen in the Premier League. Yaya Toure, though, arguably the most dominant Premier League midfielder of his era. He told us his memories of playing and training with City's hero, Aguero.
I think Aguero, how I can describe, you cannot describe Aguero because he's someone so funny, so enjoyable to live with and work with. And of course, he was a bit sad at the moment where we heard his news, like he's going to stop football. And especially me, when I have to leave Man City and leave Aguero, Kompany, Lescott, Micah Richards, Silva, all these players, leaving them and go, it was quite difficult at the time. But to be honest, Aguero for me has been one of my best teammates, like Samuel Eto'o. I've been involved in Barcelona, Thierry Henry, Didier Drogba. Aguero is among them, even Carlos Tevez, because those players, you show me how, if you guide them well, if you close to them, because in the past I never know Aguero because it was an Atletico Madrid. We always talk on the phone, and after that I was just exciting him to join it. And when it come, I come to the point where I was like doubting a bit because it was sure that he's no strong heart, he's not a hard worker in his training station. But in the game, it was so effective. And he gave us the trophies. That's how he is. That's Aguero.
We've got lots of stories to come from that incredible Aguero moment. But what was it like being on the opposite side? Anton Ferdinand was playing for QPR that day. Here's his take.
It was like a festival type show. Like, it was a bit of a libby. Like, they thought they'd won it already, so to speak. There was there's a band getting ready to play and all that type of stuff. A stage was set up, and it was, and to be fair, it became fuel for me personally. And obviously, leading up to that game, I'm a QPR player. I needed to do my job to keep QPR in the Premier League, but also Rio was depending on us to beat Man City, so Rio could get another title. But it was about QPR on the day, and we started winning the game, and then you're hearing cheers, and then you're hearing our fans are cheering because teams around us were losing. And then I remember Mancini, I swear, I remember it like it was yesterday, running around his technical area, just swearing at all his players, just swearing at them, just saying F you, F you, F you to all of these players because he thought they had lost it. And obviously Aguero come up with the goal in stoppage time, and the whole place just erupted. But in all honesty, the Man City fans were brilliant. Obviously chuffed because they had just won their first title, you know. And then when I got into the dressing room, it actually really hit home that I just lost Rio a title, you know. So it was bittersweet for me. I was buzzing that I'd reached my objective personally for the club I was playing for. But then the other side of me, the brother side of me, was I thought I'd let Rio down. So whilst people were celebrating in the dressing room, I was a bit somber, a bit. My shoulders were a bit down because I'd known that if it would have went a different way, and I felt like the goal was my fault, you know. I went for a ball that I wouldn't normally go for. I normally would push Balotelli backwards, but I tried to win the ball stupidly, which pushed him the way of Aguero. So I thought the goal was my fault, which added to the disheartenedness of feeling that I'd. Rio should be sitting with seven titles instead of six.
Now on to Jolyon Lescott. He partnered Vincent Kompany throughout that remarkable title-winning year, and it was great to speak to him about City's rise to the top and the fantastic climax to that season. Let's dive in.
Let's turn the clock back to 2008. You're at Everton,
yeah,
and suddenly the story breaks that Manchester City have been bought by Abu Dhabi owners, and it was like, wow. You're the new Chelsea. You're spending money. You're going out there and changing the game. How quickly did you and the rest of football kind of realise what was going on? And what's it like when you are a current player, and we'll talk about this later, a sought-after player, and you're thinking, wow, there's suddenly a new option here?
Yeah, to be fair, at the time, I wasn't aware that was a thing. Like, Chelsea, in greatest respect to City at the time, they wasn't as established as Chelsea. Mm. So Chelsea were adding. They wasn't trying to create something. It was like Chelsea relatively big and compete for honours, and City weren't really doing that at the time. So it was like, oh, someone's just come and it's a new ownership and trying to buy players. And then I left in what, 2009? I joined them in 2009. So it was like the beginning of 2009 when I started to hear there was genuine interest.
Yeah.
So obviously just continued to do what I was doing for Everton with the thought of hopefully it being a realistic opportunity. Come the summer, and it turned out to be.
So, regardless of the City thing, were you at that point, were you ready for a move from Everton, or were you totally happy there?
No, I wanted to progress, but I wasn't just trying to move for the sake of moving. Like, the ambition of City matched mine in regards to time frame. Like,
and what was that ambition?
To challenge. Like, Everton were competing at the time it was like us, Spurs, and Villa. 4th, 5th, 6th every year. So it was good and we were competitive, but we knew as a club and as an individual to compete in the Champions League, and I wanted to play in the Champions League, you're going to have to spend that level of money and buy world-class players. We were buying top players, but now City were trying to recruit from world-class teams, you know what I mean? So for them to want me to be a part of that, I was like, yeah, that kind of matches my ambition in the time frame. It was realistic to my career.
So, can you remember the first moment that you heard there was interest there?
Yeah, it was in mid-February. And my agent was like, this is a potential option in the summer. And when I was playing, I was like stubborn in how I approached things. I was quite superstitious. So, I was like, okay. So, they obviously want me to do what I've been doing. So, don't tell me. Don't tell me anymore because...
Is that right?
Yeah.
So how far through this conversation did your agent get before you went, da, 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 da?
When he started to talk about money.
Right.
And I was like, I don't want to hear it. Like, not, that's not what I play for or whatever kind of thing. So it was like, but this is what it is. I was like, yeah, fine. So I was like, if I just keep doing what I'm doing, the interest is still going to be there. So I don't need to know what it is. And then it comes to that stage of the season. And we was on a good cup run as well.
Yeah.
Because that was the year we played in the final. So... Like I said, I was superstitious. I didn't want to jeopardize any of that performance-wise. So I just kind of was like, yeah, whatever it is, what it is. But then as soon as like the season was done, I knew conversations had been going on because I trusted my agent and the people around me at the time to have them conversations on my behalf without me being involved.
And were Everton aware of the interest? Like, once, or was this a kind of a conversation between your agent and City, and then the Everton thing happened later?
No, I think that Everton were aware because the parties that were helping move the pieces knew both sides.
Right.
So, again, I won't reveal any names. But
now, was this not sort of unsettling for you, unsettling for Everton? Like,
because I didn't want to hear it. I chose not to be aware of it.
Is your boss at the time not coming to you going, listen, I know there's some interest, but...
No.
No?
It's funny because obviously this is David Moyes. So when we went back pre-season, and I naively now went to see him. So I know there's genuine interest now. Because in the summer, I'm aware of the conversations and stuff like that. And I know they have spoken. Everyone's spoken now, so everyone he knows without saying. So the first few days, he didn't say anything, and
this is such a funny sort of game of cat and mouse.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Everybody knows what no one wants to say. Yeah. And then I went to see him. So I said, "Gaffer, can I see you?" He's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "I'm like this interest." He's like, "But they haven't called, but I can't say how I know." So I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "Okay," and he just sat there. And I was so uncomfortable. I was like, oh my God.
So what did you say then?
Not much, to be honest. Yeah, not much. And like I said, it wasn't like an official approach. It was just conversations that both sides had been having. And then fast forward a couple of weeks and it was genuine. It was out there. There was a bid. So then I was like, Gaffer, I want to leave now. These are the reasons why. And he was like, no, that's not happening. So like, as I said, then it got to a point where...
When they say no, do they kind of sugar it with, look, you're really important to me, you're going to be central to the team? Was it just, listen, it's not happening?
Yeah,
get out of the office.
That was the first one.
Was
so
it?
That was the first
just flat
one.
No.
So, like, literally, I used to, I reckon for about 2 weeks, well, not 2 weeks, probably about 10 days, say, I'd get in the car and I lived about 30, 40 minutes away. I'd get on the phone to my brother. He'd wind me up to the point where they say, you're going to have to go and see him every day. I was like, okay. So I'd get off the phone, and we weren't allowed our phones in the training ground. So I used to leave it in the car. So I used to literally get to training, leave my phone and go straight upstairs, not go and get changed, go up see him, say, Gaffer, this is what it is. He'd be like, no. And I was like, but I've heard you say numerous times over the last couple of years or 3 years since I've been here, if someone says they don't want to play, if someone says they don't want to be here, then you
let
go.
Them go. Yeah.
So I said that to him and he was like, I don't care.
Wow.
I was like, I don't care. And I was like, Gaffer, this is like kind of what it needs to be right now for my career. Because at the time, there was half speculation of him going to United as well. I said, so I was like, literally, what if United come for you, you wouldn't go? He's like, it's different. I said, how is it different? I don't have a 15-year career at 27 to wait for another opportunity. And then obviously it just developed and I was given information that I knew both sides were privy to. So it helped me settle down and not be as... maybe erratic in decisions because I knew...
You knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, because I knew there's a business side to it, regardless of what it is. There's a business side to it, and they bought me for X, sold me for Y, so they wanted that profit, and the people that were made that decision, I don't know if they were actually telling David Moyes that, but I was aware that was going to be the decision. That's what it was going to be based on.
So interesting, isn't it? Yeah. The ins and outs of these... deals that
and it's a shame because me and David Moyes had a relationship and we have a great one now, but up until that and for a period after that, it was uncomfortable. Like, we'd see each other and we wouldn't speak, and I was like, it didn't need to be like that if people upstairs were saying this is going to happen.
It's not nothing
against you or him. It's just the reason for it.
His annoyance may well be with the hierarchy at the time that were kind of, you know, he didn't have the full picture maybe when he was talking to you,
but that's what I'm saying. But him not having a picture was taken out of me.
Yeah.
And so, again, it just got unnecessarily uncomfortable for both people. Like, I wasn't allowed to train with anyone at the club. I was having to train on my own. And, like, I was never a bad professional for that to be a thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it just didn't need to be like... But I understand why he did that. I didn't agree with it. But it was because of his thinking I'm only... Although he doesn't want to sell me, and if he says no, it's not happening unless I kick up a fuss. But I'm saying, this is going to happen. Like, we can get on board, and it can be smoother if they would tell you the truth, kind of thing.
I always look at football, you know, as like a game of broken promises, you know, people not quite delivering what they say, or people believing something will happen and it doesn't. But the promises that you were made at Manchester City have absolutely come true and then some. So can you, you know, in those days, though, it was just a trust game, right? What were they saying to you at that time?
Literally, the chairman, Carl Dewin, literally what we're seeing now, I was told that just before I signed. So it'd been agreed, I was allowed to go and see them. And I met the chairman in the Lowry, Chairman Carl Dewin. And he told me what is happening now.
What did he say then?
Like, oh, we're going to become one of the biggest forces in football, especially domestically. We're going to dominate. We're going to build the club to this. We're getting a new training ground. We're going to attract the best players because we're going to be successful. And he said, we want you to be a part of that. And he told me, like, you're the missing piece. Like, he probably said that to everyone, but I believed him. Like, he was so genuine, and he is so genuine in how he speaks. You just believe what he says. And when he's saying it to me, I'm saying, that sounds amazing. But when he's telling me about the next 10 years, I'm like, I'm not so sure that can happen in 10 years. And then you fast forward 10 years and it's happening.
So what was it like then when the truth was revealed to you? First day there, actual training, time with the manager, the facilities. Like, what are your memories of, I suppose I'd describe it as the early days, really, of this Abu Dhabi regime at City?
Yeah, so the facilities were not what they are now. Yeah. Like, stadiums were similar, but the change rooms were different. The training ground wasn't the same, nowhere near the same. It was the old Carrington, which, like, I was coming from Everton, which was a new training ground. So, again, the facility-wise was different, but how they wanted to cater for everyone was a different approach. So I hadn't missed a game for, I don't think I'd missed selection in terms of, not a game, five seasons. I'd been available for selection for five seasons. So they were aware that I had a routine and a process that allowed me to be fit and strong and competitive. And literally went in there, they said, well, what do you need? I was like, well, I'd use these machines and for these reasons. And within 2 weeks, they were there. It was just like, okay, so if you need these, we will get these enabled for
and
you
to
be. What
does that make you feel like?
Oh, just, yeah, like you honestly, genuinely want me to progress and be good. And as I said, it wasn't just for me. They were doing that for everyone. Like they, like really, that was the first time when, you know, you see, you hear about sports scientists getting involved and them able to dictate, which is more common now throughout football. Like I was seeing players manipulate their training schedules based on their history in order to be fit for the weekend, which wasn't always a thing. That some managers do that, some don't, but it was like, no, we want everyone to be good, but we want everyone to be available. So it was like they were taking a unique approach to what I've seen. The medical team there was mad. And if you speak to Owen Hargreaves about them, because he'd come from United, and he honestly said if he came and had that medical team as United, he would have played a lot more games, because they were so determined to improve. And it's not all about that, but it's a massive part. Anyone that plays knows you spend most of your time with the medical team and the backroom staff.
And what about this kind of coming and going of players and names being linked with Manchester City all the time? I remember there was a feeling, as someone outside looking in, that it was the club that everybody wanted to join, wasn't it? All of a sudden, it was like the project to be involved in.
Similar to now, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And again, it was deemed for different reasons then. Like I've touched on it before, we were only deemed for going there for money. Every player that signed for Manchester City at that period of time was, oh, he's only going there for money. But that wasn't mentioned at all within the club. It was like, no, we're coming here to be successful. We're coming here to win and challenge and compete. And
maybe a bit of fuel for you all to use to prove people wrong.
Yeah, definitely. Without us having that conversation, but it definitely was a motivation for us, because we knew we could compete. I remember when we signed the O1 League, we signed Gael Clichy and Semi Nasri. And I remember having a conversation with one of my mates who's an Arsenal fan, saying, we can win the league now. And I'd had a bet with him the season before that we would win the league then before Arsenal the next time. And he was like, no chance. I was like, mate, I'm deadly serious. And then
you've won that
forward,
bet.
Yeah. Tenfold.
You've won that bet on numerous occasions. Let's talk about the manager then, Roberto Mancini. Early impressions of him and the impact he had around the place?
The total opposite to what it was under Mark Hughes. Again, because we'd all come under Mark Hughes, there was a different level of respect. I think you have that if a manager signed you, regardless of who you are.
So,
the circumstances him leaving, I think a lot of us found it hard to deal with that because, again, I think at the time Mark Hughes left, we were second with the game in hand, 3 points behind like the leader. So he came in, and in terms of the team, he was perfect because we went from being exciting and scoring goals and winning games to being hard to beat, but still having the ability to win games. And in terms of that transition was perfect. Again, I found it a little bit difficult personally to deal with that regime because especially managers from overseas come and just think, this is what worked. He had success, obviously, at Inter Milan. This is what worked, so I'm going to do that again, not knowing the Premier League isn't like that. It's different. Teams don't play the same way, that they operate differently, and they play for their best performance, not just, oh well, this is what everyone's doing, so we'll try and do this. So found it hard for a spell, and I felt like he didn't want, if he could have found someone else to perform, he would have.
Really?
Yeah, numerous times. And that was like a running joke in the changing rooms. It was like, I know he would have sold me, but because I'd been injured, he'd come in, change the regime, I got injured, and they would have sold me. He would have tried to sell me, but...
Why are you so sure about that?
Well, I heard that.
Right.
But the club, no one was going to buy me because I'd gone for X amount. The club was going to lose money. So it was like, well, that's not an option. So he's going to have to stay. So then I realised I'm going to have to...
And what was the reason for him coming to that decision, do you think?
I don't know. He just didn't fancy me. But this is normal. That's football. It was funny because one time I didn't get selected. Again, I still laugh about it now. It's because my calf was too small. I just had an injury and he come back and literally said to, again, someone that I won't reveal his name. And that person come to me and said, oh, he's not going to play you because you think your calf's too small. I was like, what? How ridiculous is that?
Surely at that point you need to go and have a conversation with
did.
The manager.
Yeah, we did. And again, I was at an age now where I'm very kind of, especially when I played, I was like, I'm okay with being treated a certain way if everyone is treated that way. You're not going to treat me that way and not everyone else, or use them reasons for me not being involved if he can get away with that. So, yeah, we had that discussion and I was 28, maybe 29. And he was like, well, how can you be 28, 29 and not be able to train every day and play every week? I was like, that's not the thing. And this is probably where it got worse for me because he'd signed, I'd had 4 years left and he'd signed 3 years. And I said, well, my contract's longer than you. He'd wound me up to this point now. My contract's longer than yours. So I need to be fit for 4 seasons, not just be fit for the time you're here. And yeah, and that was that. I don't think that went down.
What was the reaction to that?
Yeah, it was quite negative.
Yeah, I imagine.
There was a lot of Italian going after that comment. Which again, I understood, but he drew me to that frustration. Yeah. But like, I was very calm in how I said it. I would never shout disrespectful in that sense. I could say disrespectful things, but not in a disrespectful way. And that continued throughout our relationship. But the only thing I half give him credit for, he didn't want to play me, but if the person was in the team that didn't perform, then I would go back in. Right. So,
and did you feel that you could do anything to convince him that you were the guy? Or
No. Because what had happened
No matter
was,
what you did?
No, because he was always going to try and get someone else. There was always going to be someone else.
Yeah.
So I got into the team. So came back. I'd been injured, came back. I didn't play. It was Colo and Vinny. And Colo then got suspended. Like the morning of the derby,
right?
We found out. So it was when Ray Rooney scored that over a kick. So I wasn't in the team. So then I've gone in the team and I think it was the end of January or whatever. And the club are not buying anyone. So now I'm having to play. Bearing in mind, they're not sure that players can play that amount of games. So played that remainder of that season. I think me and Vinny played 20-something games and we won the FA Cup. And that's when the fitness coaches said, like, I didn't know you could play. I said, you give me the opportunity. But now I could manipulate my schedule because now you need me to play and there's no one else. So I won't train. Every day, I'll train when it's right for me, but I'll be fit for every game. So when he's seen that, he allowed me to do it. So then the following seasons, 2012, I've come in, I'm, I worked hard throughout the off-season, came back. We progressed to the championship. We won the league. And then the following season, he bought Nastasic. And that wasn't a problem. It was the reason for me not playing in certain games. So I was like, what is the reason? And he said to me, but then he said it out in the press, like, I think his confidence has took a blow. I was like, we just won the league. I've just been away to the Euros and scored. My confidence doesn't get any higher. So your reasoning for that, for me not playing, is not that. It's not valid. So That's when I was like, it's going to be constant. So I just got on with it. And again, the statute would in, and then he would take him out, and then I would be in again. And like, I just knew he was waiting for someone to step up to play with Vinny. But I also knew I was never going to be regarded as the best centre back. I needed to be Vinny's best partner, where other defenders were trying to be the best centre back. I'm saying it's not going to work like that. But I weren't telling them that. Like, it's like when you play with Jaya, you needed to be his best partner. He could be the best midfielder. Sergio Aguero, be his best partner. We're playing 4-4-2. You're not going to be the best striker. Just be the best partnership and you play. So I was aware of that. So I just made sure I was Vinny's best partner.
So interesting. And It's so great to hear all those names that just sort of reel off the tongue. I want to talk about a few of those now because, you know, you mentioned Kompany, Yaya Toure, there was also David Silva.
Gareth Barry.
Give us an idea of training, the level of training, the quality of training, the atmosphere around there. Because I also love this idea that you were all, like, you remember the noisy neighbours conversation, you know, you were all part of this, like, Let's go and change the rules here. Let's really piss off the Man United players. I think it was a really fascinating time for you.
Yeah, it was. Again, it was comments like that were coming out, and we were just got on with it because we still had humble players. So like, we were signing David Silva's, Yaya's and Sergio's and stuff, and they were coming from, like, David was European champion. Do you know what I mean? So super talent, ridiculously humble. We already had Patrick Vieira, super humble, World Cup winner, legend of the game. So we had leaders in the dressing room to help shape everything. So, and this is what I've said to people within Man City, is like, we all know, say, Vinny as that leader, but Vinny was moulded by them players that were coming in. So I remember, what is it, the FA Cup semi-final, when Patrick took the team talk, told the staff to, like, just give me 5 minutes, and addressed us before the game and made us aware how important the occasion was for the club. And individually, like, he'd played in five, he'd won four already, but he made us aware that this is a massive thing. You know what I mean? So we had players that were leading the group without being super vocal in the press. But that period of time, like training, it was a high level. It was like when I went away with England, like, greatest respect to Everton, trained, and it was high because it was higher than where I'd come from. And then I went to England, it was like, oh, there's another level. And then you get to City and it's like, oh, this is that level every day. So it was just normal then.
And for all those sort of exciting names that had joined the club, a lot of them had come from abroad. You know, you were in there, Joe Hart was in there, you've mentioned Gareth Barry was in there. That sort of little English core as well, I imagine, was really important to the success.
Oh, huge, huge. I think we had, there's one time where we had six players play for England start.
Yeah.
And we were all at Man City, you know what I mean? Like, Micah was part of Manchester's DNA, Sean Wright Phillips. We had some talent there as well, English talent. But yeah, James Milner was there. Again, leader in his own right. So, yeah, the blend was great because the lads that come in bought into it, and we didn't let anyone get carried away with who their personality was outside of the club.
So how would you deal with someone like a Mario Balotelli figure, for example, who would come in and would be a big story, would be a big personality? It would, you know, it was kind of about him.
Yeah, it was. Mario was different, to be fair. Mario's profile was probably the biggest, and it was crazy because, like, Sergio and Carlos were doing the things on the pitch, but regardless of whatever was happening, the attention was going to be on Mario for whatever reason. So that was the first time I'd seen that, was the personality bigger than the playing performance, when we have players that perform better, you know what I mean? So that was unique. But in terms of Mario, we managed him as a group. Like, Micah was really close with him and similar ages, so he was able to navigate that. But we also had to respect that, what, he was 20, 21. Yeah. He was coming from a foreign country, new language, new league. And if you're honest, was there players that had that much focus on them in every aspect of their life at that time? Yeah, we had Wayne Rooney that was doing that, but he'd had it for forever, so it was different for Wayne. Not easy, but different. But when someone had come, like, Mario couldn't go anywhere, and that wasn't normal then, in my opinion anyway, so it must have been hard for him.
Let's talk then about the title-winning season. So loads of signings have come in. I was going to say, did that motivate you? It was obviously really interesting to hear your side of the story with the manager, but you weren't playing every week. You were having to kind of prove yourself all the time. But it feels almost like maybe that kind of worked for you in some ways. You used that as a fuel, maybe as an energy to when you did play, to play absolutely brilliantly. And there's no resting on laurels when you're in that situation, is there?
Yeah, no. And to be fair, that season I was in the team more often than not because it was the season before and I kind of earned the right to be in that team. But yeah, when the players were coming, it was just like, I knew I had to do my job. And if everyone does that more often than not, we're going to win because them lads are so good at what they do. And I just had to contribute to that. So yeah, in terms of being aware and using it as motivation, I was never doing it for anyone else anyway.
Yeah.
From the start, it was always, well, and I'm sure most players will say they're their own biggest critics. And I was like, it doesn't matter. I don't need someone to tell me I've done well.
Yeah.
It's nice when it happens, but it's not motivation. My motivation is doing well. And you know if you've done well, and if you put the work in, then you tend to do well, don't you?
Well, at this point, you were doing well. You didn't lose a game until December of this season. So did it feel different? Did it feel like, hold on, we've arrived now. This work in progress is no longer a work in progress.
Yeah, it felt different when we beat United in the semi-final. The year before.
Yeah.
Because I think at the time, their record in semi-finals was ridiculous, like 13 out of 13 or 13 out of 14. And then we came at pre-season, we'd sign Gael Samia, we signed Sergio. Sergio came to Ireland and we'd seen that talent for the first time. That was like, wow.
Yeah.
That was crazy. And we'd beat everyone pre-season, like, and we played some top teams. I think we, Inter Milan, the season before, they went and won the treble. And it was most the similar team to win that. And we beat them in Ireland comfortably and we're like, oh, it's real now. Like, we're all right. And then we play the Charity Shield against United and we lose. We'd won every preseason game and we lost that. And that was the best thing, in my opinion, that was the best thing that really happened to us because it was like a wake-up call. We're not quite there yet. We're 2-0 up at halftime and we lose 3 in the second half. We're like, well, that can happen. So let's just be aware of that. And then we go off to have a great start in the league.
Yeah, well, it was only 2 months later in October you beat them 6-1.
Yeah, again, because now we're thinking, they're still, in the greatest respect, you're still United. You still had top players, so you've got to have to respect that they can perform and produce moments and halves. So we were aware of that. And as I said, it wasn't a motivation going into that game, but it was like, we wasn't never playing any team with the hope of beating them.
Yeah.
We honestly believed we could beat any team.
And we've got another episode in these 30 years of the Premier League podcasts called Nearly Men. People that got so close and it didn't happen. Was there any fear at this point about, come on guys, we don't want to be Premier League nearly men?
No, not that early in the season, because if it was going to be decided that early in the season, then they would have had to earn it like we would have had to earn it. Yeah, that was like towards the end when we had a lead and we lost it.
That's an interesting bit, the losing of the lead. So was there a moment where you thought, this is going to happen? And equally, was there a moment where you thought, bloody hell, we've blown this, I can't believe it?
I don't remember there being a moment when we thought it was going to happen.
Yeah.
I think we were like maybe going into the QPR game because we had QPR at home who were near the bottom of the league and we just thought we were going to win that game. But it wasn't like, oh, we've won the league. But in terms of, is it not going to happen? And whether he did this on purpose or not, I don't know. We played Everton in January, because Yaya was on African Nations.
Right.
We lost 1-0. And Mancini come in, everyone come in, and he told us we were crap. We didn't use the word crap, he used the stronger word, without Yaya Toure. and everyone went crazy. Like, wow. It erupted. Like, so you say you cannot say that. And once he said that, it was just made us tighter. So not just to prove him wrong, but like, because we had the greatest respect for Yaya, and I'm his biggest fan, yeah. Best player I played with. So in regards to that, it was nothing against him. It was like, well, we're going to have to kind of prove him wrong now. So that was an occasion where you're thinking that was a big turning point. And then the Arsenal game, we lost to Arsenal at the Emirates. And I don't think there was many games left after that. So where we're thinking, well, Man United don't tend to slip up in these moments. And then the glimmer of hope was the Wigan game. They lost to Wigan. And then we was on the way to Wolves and they were due to Everton. So we knew if we beat Wolves, it was in our hands, yeah. Then. And we still had to play them, but it was in our hands. And that was a tough day for me because we had to beat Wolves. If we beat Wolves, we are in control. But if we beat Wolves, they go down. And the manager of Wolves was my mentor, Terry Connor. So he's going to take Wolves down, but we're going to be top. So we did that. Again, professional, we won the game. And I seen him after the game and he was in tears, literally in tears. And he was like, just make sure you go on and win the league now. So that was like a mad moment, emotional moment for me then.
That is amazing. It's another of those things where, as a football fan, we see it from one perspective, but there's so many layers always to, you know, so many other stories beneath the story that we see.
Yeah, definite. It's crazy.
And I want to work out how you, obviously you had people in there that had great careers, but how did you, for the first time you were going for the title, how did you get the balance right between just focusing on yourself, focusing on City, focusing on your performances, but at the same time, who have United got this week? What time is their kickoff? What was their result? Like, this neck and neck battle for a fan was fantastic.
Yeah.
But as a footballer, it's just relentless, isn't it?
Yeah, at the start of the season, you focus on yourself because so many games to go and you're not going to win or lose the league that early in the season. And we're just confident that we could beat any team, and then it gets to the February and you're like, this is where the famous like United turn the screw and can come up with remarkable runs of form. So again, we were just aware that that was going to happen. We were dropping points, and then it was only the Wigan game. I consciously remember the Wigan game thinking, oh
yeah,
something's different there. They don't normally lose them games. So then I was like looking at the results. I wasn't looking at their fixtures. I was looking at their results and being like, okay, maybe it's gonna happen for us.
Did you have a relationship with any of the United players?
No. Like Rio, obviously.
But that has to fall away though, surely, at this point in the season.
Oh yeah, me and Rio lived on the same road and never spoke the whole time. We speak more now. We used to speak a lot when I was at Everton.
Yeah.
And then he encouraged me to go to City, him and Wayne. Similar, I used to get tickets off Wayne when I was at Everton for my family or friends that are United fans and get him tickets if he needed them for Everton games. I go to City and that stops. We don't really communicate the same. There's a huge respect for each other, like England and stuff. And then as we're progressing now, it's like, oh, okay. So yeah, me and Rio like never seen each other, never arranged to meet. We lived on the same road for years. And then, it was never... We were friends, but not like... It wasn't like that. Not like now. So like we would speak all the time now, but no, that wasn't a thing.
So the day comes, the QPR game. When you talk to City fans about that day, obviously they talk about the Aguero moment, but they've always got a little thing that leaps out to them that might be a bit different. When I talk to you about that day, where's the first place that your brain takes you to?
Walking out, to be fair. So walking out, just feeling confident that we were going to win. And maintaining that up until the second goal. Because people think, oh, you must have dropped confidence on the first goal when I contributed to them scoring. I was like, nah. Because it led to us being 1-1. I'm thinking, we're going to score. We're going to score one goal. Like, we can. We do that. Yeah. Then we went 2-1 down. And that's when I was like, oh, no.
Have you got any idea what's going on at Sunderland?
No. We weren't concerned. We didn't have to be, though. It didn't matter because if we had to win.
If we 2-1 down.
We had to win. And if we won, it didn't matter if they won whatever. We were going to win the league, weren't we? So That wasn't a concern.
Right. So and you like didn't know even late on that they'd won and you had to get that
no,
goal?
No. But we knew we had to win. So yeah. We knew we had to get that goal because we had to win regardless. We expected them to win. Like, that wasn't never, not saying in doubt because you got to respect the opposition. But yeah, we thought they were going to win. And then, like I said, the second goal was like, oh, this is, now we've got to score two. This is peak. This is, yeah. That was when I was nervous about the outcome of it. I'm thinking, I can't leave the house. I'm thinking, I don't want to go on the school.
Even when you're on the pitch playing?
Yeah. And, but like, having spoken to the team now, teammates now, they were thinking the same things. And it was funny because we did a reunion in, 10-year reunion in May.
Yeah.
And we was up on stage and we're talking about it. And I was saying like, I'm thinking, I don't want to go on the school run. I don't want to go on holiday. I don't even know if I want to go away with England to the Euros if we do not win this league. And I'm thinking that, and then people are laughing and stuff. And Cheeky's there. Cheeky, the City Sporting Director. Fast forward to the Villa game at the end of last season. I seen him after the game. And he said to me, he said, when you were saying that on stage, he said, I didn't understand what you were saying. He said, until we were 2-0 down against Aston Villa. He said, and then I thought, I don't want to leave the house. I don't want to leave. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to go on holiday. And I was like, it was a genuine thought process. I'm thinking on the pitch like, oh, we cannot lose this. And then, like I said, speaking to other players and hearing their stories, similar thoughts.
And how do you still focus on your own performance then in that situation, and particularly not allow the occasion to overwhelm you to the point that you make a stupid mistake, because like, that can happen.
Yeah, of course it can happen. As I said, I never got carried away with the highs. So the lows, I just used to take them the same approach. Was like, what was the reason for it? Then try not to do it again. Listen, you make mistakes, like you're saying, but I just never got carried away with anything really. So it's quite level in terms of the balance of my emotions.
So what about the goal then? What about that moment? The most famous moment really in Manchester City's history. What?
Premier League history, I think
it's called. Yeah, you know what I mean. It's a Premier League podcast. What's your memory of that moment? What do you see? When I say talk about the goal, what do you see?
I see celebration. I don't see the goal.
Really?
The first time I seen the goal was on a replay.
No way.
Yeah.
Where were you looking?
I don't know. I wasn't looking at the goal though. I was looking, because you don't tend to watch, you can't watch play. You tend to watch what you need to do if this doesn't go to plan.
So do you hear the noise first?
Yeah, I heard the noise. I heard the noise and then that was it. But I remember knowing, like, I didn't see how it went in. Like, I, if you would have asked me at that time, oh, where did he score? I wouldn't have said, I went near post. But I just know Sergio was in. I just knew that was happening. And that wasn't, it's easy to say now because you've gone on to have a similar situations and the same outcome. But I said this before, like, if someone is born to do something, he's born to do that. Like, literally be in that moment and be so calm and composed. Like I said, I've seen it so many times after, but I was like near the halfway line. And I remember just looking around thinking, I need to get to someone that I know as fast as possible. So whether that was a player, but it was members of staff, because I was like, we were kicking north, so my side of the pitch was like literally by the dugout. And I remember seeing the two physios that I'd worked with throughout my career there and just running to them and just thinking, I'm going to jump all over you. You need to catch me because I'm coming. And then I just ran and just jumped all over them because, again, like I said before, players know that backroom staff, kit men, physios, masseurs, whoever it may be, their hours are longer than the players. They don't get the recognition. So for the players to appreciate them is huge for them. And they, like I said, they were friends for life.
I mean, of all the players to do it, it's Sergio Aguero who gets that goal. What do you want to say about him?
First, thank you. Again, I've said it to him a few times. But I would like, you know, like, humble, just someone, again, in probably coming in with the hope of it being successful, not a great or a legend. It was just like a young striker coming from Atletico, and we had Carlos Tevez, who was Argentinian and played for Argentina, and Sergio was kind of the understudy. But as soon as you come in, you've seen the talent. Like, there was a training session in Ireland, I remember, and he turned me and Vinny inside out, but didn't score, but he was just like, oh, it's a little bit different. And then as I got to know him and understand how he worked, his mindset was just so unique. Like, he would be upset if he scored and we did, if we won and he didn't score. And I loved that. I loved it because I knew if we all did our job, he would do his.
Yeah.
And that would be the outcome. We would win more times than we lose. So, yeah, I admired his approach to that and be so focused. And like I said, there's moments when people are more comfortable than others, and him in front of goal was like, you could just see him just like relax. It was just like, I used to say to him, like, what do you look for? What don't you like? And he would say his concentration when he was finishing was on his standing foot. Never the striking foot. It was always, where did his foot need to be? Next to the ball. And I was like, oh, okay. He said, so that was what he used to focus on the most and just make sure that he was able to get a good strike. I was like, yeah, that's, it's an interesting approach too, because people just think, oh, where do I hit the ball? And he was like, no, my standing foot needs to be right.
When you're so good at finishing, you can think about the foot that's not doing the finishing.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny because when you think about it, like if you looked at someone that was swinging both feet without no ball, you wouldn't know what footed they were. You would just look and say, well, yeah, they have a good technique. Where he was like, no, this is what is most important to me. When he's striking it, I was like, okay. And it was funny because like when I used to do work when I was younger, Paul Ince used to say the same thing. He said, make sure you concentrate on your standing foot when you're using your weak foot, because that's what you're thinking about is, I'm just thinking of contact on the ball. He's like, no, because you think you need to think about the balance of your body, but second nature when it's your good foot. So he was like the same mindset.
And we often talk about natural ability and talent and right time, right place and all that. And I think that doesn't do service to the hard work.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the work ethic that Sergio had.
It was different because, again, like you said, he wasn't solely naturally gifted at everything. He worked hard.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the hardest working. But again, his ability may have been the composure he had when he was in the situations he needed to be in and execute. But like, yeah, if we were doing training sessions that didn't involve goals,
not bothered.
He probably couldn't concentrate.
That's about working smart, not working hard.
There you
though,
go. And he used to say, like, and again, me and Carlos Tevez used to laugh about, his assists weren't great. Like he couldn't concentrate when he's putting someone in on goal. He might be putting you a little bit wider, so then you'd have to cross it back to him. But when it was a goal, when there was goals involved, you could see that it was like, oh, okay. And again, it was like, Jermaine Defoe was like that. Like the people that you see that change when there's a goal involved, it's different to them. And when I went with England, there was Rio, Ash, Stevie G and Wayne Rooney. That like, it's different. It's a high level, very, very high, the highest level. But then there's a different to that. And you could just see that people like that have that ability.
And then the full-time whistle goes.
I don't even know if I was outside for a while. I think I might have run in. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, again, this bit is a bit...
It's interesting, isn't it? How your brain didn't photographically remember the biggest moment in your career at that point. Like, what?
Wow. Yeah, I don't even remember. Did I stay out or did I go in? I think I may have run in. I remember being inside after and waiting for everyone to come in and then lads taking themselves individually away to just go and collect their thoughts. There was a massive like noise celebration and stuff, but then it simmered down to where someone was in the shower, someone was in the doctor's room, someone was in the physio's office, and it was just like everyone was separate. Not everyone, sorry. There's a few lads that just really took themselves away.
Yeah.
Must have been to compose themselves.
And what was in your mind at this point? Because this is the culmination of a journey.
Yeah. Different when you're playing, because you don't expect it, but you've worked for it. So this was the outcome. So why should you be surprised if you've put in the work for this outcome? You then can't be surprised by the outcome. That's why I'm thinking. Yeah. So it was like, it wasn't like I'm going to win multiple and it's going to happen again next season and the season after that. It was just like, yeah, just enjoy the occasion and we move on. But I was just celebrating again, friends for life. Like that is a bond that cannot be broken.
You can't talk about winning the title without the party. Was it a week-long party?
Yes. Me and Michael went out for a good 4 or 5 nights in a row.
Did you go home in between?
Yeah. I'm hygienic. I have to change up, man. I have to change up my clothes. Yeah. You have to change up the clothes. But yeah, no. So that night, and it was good because staff now I see regular when I go back there, but there's a lot of staff that, because the club was different and the setup was different, we didn't see a lot of them. So you see them on a match day at the stadium, but the offices weren't at the training ground.
Right.
The training ground was a lot smaller, so but everyone was at that party. So the town hall, like everyone was there, every member of staff.
And how many days after the win was the party? The official party?
No, that was the night after the game. Yeah, we literally went. I got a picture on my phone. I literally went and got changed, had my medal on, and we went to party. And yeah, we went hard, real hard. And then the parade, went out after the parade, went hard again. And was just going hard for a while, to be fair. But then obviously, I think it was like 4 days we had, because I didn't go on holiday then, because again, we had internationals and we went to the Euros. So at the time, you enjoy it, but you got to cap it a little bit.
When did it sink in then, what you'd achieved together and what you'd done? Because I think instantly it's not really possible, is it?
No, it's not. I don't think it was possible until you retire, really. That's what I'm sad for now, for current players that maybe don't understand what they're actually doing. Mm. And I'm not talking successful as in trophies, like that is the pinnacle, but just playing. Like, knowing that you're one of few that are able to compete and play and perform at that level and being unaware that you are that until you retire is probably one thing I regret I didn't appreciate.
But I always say that if you spent time appreciating that, it takes you out of the zone you need to be
who
in
knows?
To be
yeah,
there.
Who knows?
Know?
Yeah, who knows? I'm glad it wasn't.
You almost can't be both.
Yeah, you can't be. Again, I'm aware of that, but it would have been nice to have more moments of being able to recognise what you were doing rather than it solely being just that.
And do you think it's, for you, it certainly is, but generally, do you believe it to be the greatest Premier League moment?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because of the circumstances.
Yeah.
Not just, it's the first, like, Leicester winning the league is remarkable. The Invincibles is remarkable, but beat United, the rivals, the arch rivals, same city, and goal difference, the last kick of the game. Like, I would say this now, just imagine that being Spurs beating Arsenal.
Yeah.
Everton beating Liverpool, but it would be the second time it's done. Mm. So it can't be the same. So the first time has to be the most unique and special moment in the history of the Premier League.
And for you, being involved in the very first time is special. I think the important thing to also remember is the city that we see today, numerous titles, numerous trophies, you know, statues all around the stadium, statues all around the training ground. But it all was built from that first Premier League win. You don't get that first Premier League win, you don't get anything else.
Oh, that is crazy, yeah, because I'd never thought of that. And then we went to... I went to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix with Mike, and Sergio was out there, and he said that. He said, if we didn't win, this ain't the same. I was like, wow, you think that? I'm thinking, Sergio, girl, you should be thinking that. It's multiple goals, multiple trophies. I'm thinking, yeah, you're probably right, though. If we don't win that, the club probably isn't the same. You know what I mean? Then we're probably just the noisy neighbours. We're so close, but then do you attract the players that you can attract and stuff? So... yeah, it's the timing of it and the outcome has definitely propelled or played a part in the club being what it is now.
What a journey, man.
It's got to be one of the greatest Premier League stories ever told, right? I mean, I still remember that moment. I remember where I was. It's all people talked about for days. Manchester City had finally arrived, and you can trace that success right through to their incredible dominance under Pep Guardiola. But for every incredible story of winners, though, there has to be losers. Here's Rio Ferdinand and Paul Scholes, who both played for Manchester United in their win at Sunderland, thinking they'd snatched the title from City's grasp.
When you lose big moments, man, and again, we're involved in big moments for winning, but also big moments for losing, the goal that Aguero scores, our game finishes and we've won the league. If it stays like that, we've won the league. And then it gets taken away. Like, so you've got one hand on it and you're thinking, right, how we're going to celebrate, guys. Well, the whole place changes, the stadium changes because the goal goes in. The Sunderland fans are cheering, laughing at us. Our fans are on the floor, on their knees. And to compound it all by our Manchester City rivals, because you see stuff going on the side of the pitch. Because you're well aware of it, normally you don't engage with anything that's going off the pitch. And I never, ever let myself do that, really. But when the stakes are so high and you're waiting on a result, you see our QPR have scored, QPR ahead, oh my God, oh, QPR have had a man sent off, oh, they've got one back. You can see it all going off. You can see players on the touchline. You can see fans in the stand. You're asking each other, what's happened? What's happened? It's like, it's mad. It's mental. Mental, mental game. But unfortunately, it never happened for us.
We never expected City to lose the game. We know it against QPR. We never thought it was even possible to get close. So to end up as we did, we did our job. I don't think we was probably that enthusiastic about our game, to be honest, because we felt it was a dead game. Didn't really matter. But we ended up doing our job. We ended up winning the game. And you know, we didn't know anything until the end of the game, what was actually happening. And I think when we finished, QPR were actually leading. And I was amazed. I was astonished, really. But never really still believed that we were going to win it because... So there was no massive surprise when City scored them goals and Aguero scored his goal. There was no major surprise. I don't think there was a major disappointment. But I don't think the disappointment was as bad because you felt going up, leading up into the game, you have a free week or something. They've got Cuba. You think, gee, you've got no chance. You've got no chance anyway. So I don't think the disappointment was as big as it probably could have been.
Great, isn't it, to hear that glory and despair, two sides of the same coin. We'll be very lucky to get a Premier League moment greater than that Aguero goal. One that might come close, however, is a title win that nobody saw coming. Could they really do it? It was a 5,000-1 shot. Join us next time on the Premier League Storybook for the remarkable story of how Leicester won the league.
Sport Pods.